Twitter is dead, with any luck. Long live literally anything else, is what I say.
Surely the Fediverse.
Well, there is that, yes. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I've been playing with Blue Sky this week.
Uh-huh.
Well, actually, for a few weeks now, I've been playing with Blue Sky. I know it's one of those contentious things that one social media platform dies and where does everyone go? And it feels like a lot of our people went to the Fediverse.
Yeah.
But sometimes we need to talk to people who aren't our people.
Right. So
it's always good to reach outside your bubble. And I've been playing with Threads for a while, and now I've noticed that Blue Sky has picked up a little bit, and I think it's been all over the news that they've been talking about how many numbers they've got and all that kind of stuff.
It has picked up a pace, yeah.
Yeah. And as someone who works in DevRel, where you have to like pimp your stuff all over the place and reach to people outside of your bubble, I thought it'd be a good idea to create some new accounts on Blue Sky to counteract the downward death spiral, with any luck, of Twitter and the lack of engagement on Mastodon and the kind of ickiness that some people feel about Threads. The algorithm over there isn't great. So I created three new Blue Sky accounts, and then Martin created one as well. So it's like Blue Sky as far as the eye can see. So I created one for the company. So I've got anchor.com as the account name. So it's at anchor.com. And I created one for Sift and one for Gripe. And the reason I did those three is because those are the three that we had on Twitter. So I thought I'd mirror those, not in terms of content, but mirror them in terms of the number of accounts that we have so that we can just switch and point everyone to the new ones.
I quite like that feature of Blue Sky where you don't need to pay a billionaire $8 a month or whatever it is now to get a verified check. If you administer a domain, you can actually augment your handle to be the domain that you own, which I think is a much better way of verifying who you are or the organization that you are and things of that nature.
It's also a revenue stream for Blue Sky because they can sell you a domain if you want to have your own and you don't have a domain.
Mm-hmm.
They're a reseller for Namecheap or someone and they get a little thin slice of... So that's one of their revenue streams. I don't know what the others are, but that's one of them.
Earlier on, you mentioned something about Threads and the icky algorithm. I know nothing about Threads. So what's like the quick lowdown on what the pushback is on Threads from some people?
So Threads is very like Twitter, but it's hooked into your Instagram account. So if you've already got an Instagram account, then you can very easily just press a button and you've now got a Threads account. And because it's belongs to Meta, some people still feel it's a bit icky, you know, social media platforms being owned by billionaires. That never went well. So there's that side of it, the ownership. But also in terms of algorithm, one of the things that people have criticized is that it kind of rewards viral, stupid questions from people you don't even follow. And so you start seeing these dumb questions pop up. And some of them, you know, are people trying to engagement bait or rage bait. And some of them are just genuinely people with questions that they're posting on social media. And, you know, it's very hard to tell one from the other. So Threads is not particularly good, I think, from my perspective, for open source projects or for enterprises want to do professional posts, it seems to be mostly old school Twitter where people are just posting stupid stuff. Like, you know, you could see Marmite and Channel 4 having a battle about something, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right,
that's
okay.
Very lightweight, not very stressful, but some people get a bit narked about.
I heard that called content slop earlier today. I kind of like that.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about Threads. I'm here to talk about Blue Sky. So there was this feeling that a lot of people were moving to Threads, but actually it seems like there are a lot of people who stuck around on Twitter and then have eventually, there's that network effect where some, in inverted commas, nerd famous people, developers mostly, have moved across, and DevOps people and InfoSec people have moved across. Now, I found that interesting because there was quite a flurry after some nerd famous people moved across. And soon after they did, there was a lot of heavy promotion of what are called starter packs. And one of the interesting features of Blue Sky is you can make a list of people and then share it. And it's called a starter pack. And there's a place on the Blue Sky website where you can search for starter packs. And so these are curated lists of people based around a topic or a job they do or a piece of software they use or an interest. So for example, there are developer relations people as a list, and then there's people who are interested in Linux as a list, as a starter pack. And so what happens is when you sign up to Blue Sky and you go and look at these starter packs, or you just see them shared in your timeline, if you click on them, you'll see the full list of who is in the starter pack. And at the top, you'll see who maintains that starter pack. And so you can either individually follow the people who are in the starter pack, or there's a big follow all button at the top and you just go and add them all to your account so you can follow all of them at once. You don't have to, obviously, you could just cherry pick whoever looks interesting from the list. And it's useful from that point of view to discover people, but it's also useful on the other side to be on a starter pack, on one of these lists. And I found that out by asking for myself, my own personal account, to be added to a couple of starter packs because I had interests that matched the description. So, for example, podcasting is one of the starter packs I got added to, and developer relations people, people who work in DevRel, I got added to. And it really makes a difference to the number of people who suddenly discover you and start following you. And so you notice your follow count goes up when you're on one of these starter packs, because a lot of people do just hit the follow all button at the top because it's a good way to get a whole bunch of interesting people in your timeline. And for the open source tools, Sift and Gripe, for their accounts, I managed to get them listed on an interesting open source projects kind of, and open source companies kind of starter pack. And that made a massive difference. I started both of those accounts about a month ago, and within a few days, they were at like 20 or 30 followers. And now when I looked this morning, it was like 280. It jumped like quite a bit. Now, I know 280 is not a lot of followers. I get that. And these are very niche pieces of software. An SBOM generator and a vulnerability scanner are a lot, not like, they're not Joe Rogan, PewDiePie, or, you know, any of those people, or Linux. But they are, I found it interesting that, you know, still people end up following them, I suspect because they probably hit the follow all button.
Have you found that on any of your accounts, is there a correlation between lots of people finding you from being in a starter pack and more engagement on your posts?
To some degree, yes. But I don't post a tremendous amount at the moment. I'm planning to do a bit more of that, and I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. But there's certainly more engagement on Blue Sky than there is on Twitter. That's for certain. Twitter is like shouting into the void if you don't have a paid account. It's just pointless. There's like no engagement unless you're like constantly, relentlessly posting, and you're posting within that bubble of politics and developers, then you get nothing. And also, unless you pay, and I'm not paying. On the subject of how to post, because I've got multiple accounts in various places, I wanted something easier, especially when I went to Barcamp a few weeks ago. I wanted a way that I could take a photo or post about something that was happening and it just go to all of my accounts. And there are lots of tools like this. There's one we've used at Canonical, and we also use at Anchor, which is CoSchedule. And it's more of a corporate tool for posting stuff that's like blog posts and social campaigns and all that kind of stuff. I just wanted something where I could just type something, add a photo, hit send, and it go to all my accounts and me not have to copy and paste it to lots of places. So I only have to type in the alt tags once. I only have to upload the image once. And I found a tool called Publer, P-U-B-L-E-R. And I've got a free account, and the free account lets me use three different social media platforms, which is Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Threads. That's it. It works. It's pretty straightforward. You can pay, but I don't.
Similarly, I use Buffer, and I have my Mastodon, Blue Sky, and LinkedIn connected because it has a 3-account limit on the free tier.
The problem is I'm not really willing to pay for a tool like that. And so I'm dangerously close to writing my own tool to do this and just re-implementing all these tools like everyone else does, because I just don't want to pay another tool, because I know that there's only a limited amount of features that I want, and I don't want to pay for a huge tool that does loads of stuff when there's only a limited set of features I want.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm sure there must be something out there. So if you know of something, do let us know. But earlier on over coffee, you showed me Publer, and it was able to do more than just schedule posts. You could use it as a means of interacting with the comments in all of the places as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Once you've posted something, you can click on it, whatever platform it's on, and you see all the replies underneath. And then you can just post a reply directly from the app. So you can actually use it as a single client, but focus on each platform one at a time. It's quite neat like that.
And I suppose that means then that Blue Sky has quite an open API for hooking in with this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's well-documented API, and there's more and more of these clients. A lot of them have added Blue Sky to the portfolio of applications that they can talk to, and it's really easy to set up. You just go into Blue Sky, and there's a button where you give the external application a name, and it generates a code. You paste that into the other application, job done. And then it's got authentication to post as you and see replies and stuff like that. It's pretty straightforward.
So I know Alan has written Mastodon bots in the past and has said how easy the Mastodon API is to work with for doing that sort of thing. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote some Blue Sky bots for the Linux Matters podcast to post our episodes. And similarly, having never used it before and also doing it with TypeScript, which I've never really used in anger, it was very easy to create a bot for Blue Sky using TypeScript because Blue Sky published their API SDK for a number of languages. So it's really easy to ingest and use.
So getting back on topic, if you would like to follow us on Blue Sky, you'll find Linux Matters is there. I'm there. Martin's there. We haven't quite cajoled Mark to go there yet.
Oh, I don't need another social network.
Yes. But the Linux Matters account is there, and it's knocking on 1,000 followers already. And
nice.
I don't know how long that account's been there, but it's not very long at all. I think you created it, didn't you, Martin? Just a few weeks ago.
I did when it was invite only, but it's only accelerated in the last few weeks since you've been starter packing everything.
Yeah, since I've been going around begging people to add accounts to their starter packs, and it works. So, yeah. So if you're interested in something else, then take a look at it. If you're interested in helping me make a thing that means I don't have to pay for Buffer or Publer, then let me know, because I'm quite keen to work on something like that. I might have a little noodle over the Christmas period. And maybe by the time you listen to this, there is something. Who knows? It may be linked in the show notes. Go and take a look. Go to linuxmatters.sh and look for the show notes.
I've spoken in the past about one of the many things I run on my home servers being Plex. And this is what I use to serve video content internally. And for a while, I also used it for any other sort of media I had, music and audiobooks and whatever else. But as I've also spoken about, I've now moved them off onto dedicated services which are more suited for that kind of content. My reason for doing this in the first place is partly to avoid having to flaff around with physical media. I don't have to have all of my CDs and DVDs. I don't actually have to have a DVD player plugged into the tellies. I can just have all of my content ripped onto my server and then stream it to whichever device I want to watch it on. And the other thing is it provides a backup for, you know, we're subscribed to a few streaming services, but if the internet goes down or all of them have an outage at once, this way we've still got some content available to watch.
And I guess when the zombie apocalypse comes, you need to be able to refer to the reference material that is 28 days later to find out what to do.
Exactly. I'll set up a mesh network in my local neighborhood connected to my Plex server. Excellent. And charge people cans of beans to watch episodes of Stargate SG-1 or something. Now, while Plex does the job, I've never been entirely happy with it. There's a few little niggles, like the fact that even if you're authenticating across the LAN with your own server, you still have to authenticate via their service at plex.tv. And increasingly, it seems like playing your local media is an afterthought, and they really want to be your streaming portal where you watch all of the things rather than the stuff that's on your Plex server.
Why would they do that?
I mean, they're a commercial company. They're perfectly, you know, it's not, this isn't open source community developed software. This is a commercial proprietary product. So they're completely at liberty to do whatever they want with it. But it's increasingly not serving the particular use case I'm trying to use it for.
That authentication thing caught me out recently. So I've got Plex running on my home server, I'll get to that another day. I'm very interested in this. But one of the things that Plex does at the moment is scoop up all of your viewing and feed it back to them. And I read there was a way to opt out of this, but the way you do it is you have to go to some random blog post, which is like unrelated to that at all. And buried in the middle of that, there is a link, which is click this link. And then there's some sort of obscure clicky thing, which doesn't look like you're opting out of anything at all. But that is like the opt-out flow of submitting all of your viewing and browsing habits back to Plex. And I only found out about this because somebody had wrote a very detailed guide on Reddit about it's hard to get out of, but you have to jump through these hoops of fire to do it.
Wow, I wasn't even aware of any of this. So yes, the other fatal flaw of all of this is that when we did actually have an internet outage... and we tried to watch something on Plex, the client on the TV won't connect to your server if it's not online.
Wow.
Wow, it doesn't even appear as like a DNLA server or something.
No, it's just...
Wow.
Well, I might have been able to connect to it via other means, but opening up the Plex client and trying to watch something, it just didn't see the server.
That's rubbish.
Yeah. So at that point, I thought, this isn't actually serving the use case I'm running it for, so maybe it's time to look at something else. And the way I got to Plex was because previously I'd been running NB, which I jumped from because it wasn't very good for managing music playlists, and the license change meant it wasn't open source anymore. So Plex was basically no worse from a licensing point of view and better from every other point of view.
Right.
Right.
But since then, there's been a fork of NB called Jellyfin, which is entirely open source. And while when I have tried to use the music playlist features, they've still not been particularly good. I don't need that anymore because all my music's now served by a Subsonic server. So I thought, well, I wonder how well it's going to work if I just spin up a Jellyfin server and stick all of my videos on there. So I gave that a go yesterday. I ran it using Docker. So it's not on my main little Wise server, which has all of my Docker Compose stuff. So I just used the example Docker command they had with a whichever flag it is you say use to say if it falls over, start it up again, and pointed it at the same media directories that Plex was pointing at. And I let it run overnight to index everything because the box it's running on is quite slow. And then the next day, I let my daughter try and watch Paw Patrol. And it worked.
Yay! Mission accomplished.
Yes. So I'm quite happy with this. The other nice thing is logging in to an app on your telly, it does pop up with a username and password box, but you also have the option to have it generate a code, which you can then enter on the server, and then it'll log you in, like most sort of...
smart TV.
Yeah, flows. Smart TV, or, yeah, exactly, like actual streaming services do. So that actually makes it quite a lot easier to connect devices.
So you're using a smart TV, and the smart TV has some app framework in it?
Yeah, so my TV is a Roku TV, right, and upstairs we have a Roku box plugged into the other TV, which is an otherwise unsmart TV.
And therefore, Jellyfin is in the Roku channels that you can add to
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, so we've got the essentially the Jellyfin app on Roku, and there's Jellyfin apps elsewhere. And of course, it has a web interface, so you can just log into the web interface and play stuff on anything with a suitable web browser as well.
Last I had a look at Jellyfin, the user interface was bare bones. Would that be fair?
I think so. I mean, I honestly haven't looked at it that far because all I need it to do is index some videos and then show me thumbnails of those videos and let me select and play them.
Yeah.
So for much beyond that, I don't know. But also because all of the complex stuff I do with managing, I now do in other services because I don't need to do a lot of management of video other than have it and play it. It finds all of the artwork and it finds summaries of episodes and synopses of films and stuff. So it gives you a bit of enrichment, and it seems to have done a pretty good job of identifying what's what. The only bit I did manually was add like a, because I've got one library of movies and one library of TV shows, and then I added a sort of cover image for each of those libraries, because otherwise it just shows you a grey box. But that's all I've really looked into in terms of the interface, and it kind of does the specific job I need it to.
I've set up Plex on the home server here and also Jellyfin as well, and I'm running them side by side, and I've put our movies and TV into both. In the past, Plex was superior to everything. Plex is now a little more complex by comparison, but in a bad way. It's a bit like, I don't know, KDE versus GNOME. No, maybe that's a poor example, but you know.
Yes,
it's
that's like, a poor example.
It's all of the twiddles and buttons and knobs versus just the ones you actually need. Mm. And I found that Jellyfin actually presents just an easier interface because for people that are not me, as in the rest of the family, Jellyfin is a much more accessible, familiar to sort of how modern day streaming services work. I've been very pleased with it. And like you were saying, Mark, now I'm not looking at Plex to do everything because it used to be the do all stream everything, photos, home videos, everything. Now I've broken that stuff up as well. Jellyfin is really good for indexing the TV and films. And I've got a slightly different experience on the client side, which I'll cover in a separate episode when I get to talking about how I battled with that. I've created an owncast server on that there Fediverse and accidentally become an owncast contributor.
Accidentally, you say?
Yes.
You slipped and fell on a pull request.
Honestly, officer, I was just cleaning it and it committed.
Yeah, so it actually was a lot like that in retrospect. So this is a little bit of a callback to episode 36, where Alan used StreamSprout, a project that I'd created, which does multicasting. So very quickly, you stream to one place with one stream and it fans them out so you can go to Twitch and YouTube. And in Alan's case, he was streaming to Twitch, YouTube and an owncast server that he created. So I wanted to do the same. I'm on this, get all my stuff on the Fediverse trip. So that was my main motivation for doing it. But in doing so, I ran into a problem, which was my Hetzner box that I have rented is actual hardware. And I chose it because it has an Intel 8700 CPU, which can do hardware accelerated video encoding on the chip. And I had this live streaming in mind for that. But when I first deployed it, none of that stuff would work. None of the hardware acceleration stuff would work. And when I went hunting through the owncast documentation, which is very comprehensive and very good, I discovered that only FFmpeg 4 is supported for hardware acceleration using VA API. So VA API is one of the Linux APIs for video acceleration. It does a whole bunch of stuff, not just encoding of video. And now for a lot of people, that's going to be tricky because FFmpeg 4 is quite old now. What I was able to do was change the Nix package to say use FFmpeg 4, which is still in the archive, as opposed to current FFmpeg. And I was then able to access this. So it all worked. And thank you to those of you in our Linux Matters Chatters Telegram group, which you can access at linuxmatters.sh/telegram. For helping test that a couple of weekends ago, where 20 of you sort of came into that stream, which was basically the DVD screensaver, and helped me figure out how to scale it and make sure it was working. And it was great because it was actually producing, that little Intel CPU was producing 5 different encodes of the stream in different resolutions, frame rates, and bit rates. And it was doing that, and like the CPU was just not, it wasn't hot, and it was like 2% utilization. It just doesn't hit the CPU at all. It's actually amazing technology. But I wasn't happy with this having to use an old version of FFmpeg and having to work around packaging of current software in order to make it work. So I looked at the owncast bug tracker and found that the most discussed bug is this one, which is modern versions of FFmpeg are not supported. And as I read through it, I thought to myself, I know how to fix this. Armed with the knowledge I acquired making StreamSprout and also another tool, which maybe I'll get to another day, I felt confident I could work on this. So I did. And I've produced a pull request for the project that enables VA API hardware encoding for FFmpeg 4, 5, 6, and 7. And tested it because I have GPUs, tested it on Intel GPUs and AMD GPUs. And I was also able to test NVENC on NVIDIA GPUs to make sure that nothing regressed. So I was very pleased that I was able to contribute that patch to the project. And I contacted Gabe, the lead developer of Owncast, who I met briefly at the Ubuntu Summit in 2023, because he was presenting there, which is where I think we first found out about Owncast, and sort of agreed like how I'd prepare this patch. Now, as good as the CPU utilization is for this hardware accelerated encoding, the quality is not great. It's certainly not as good as the software encoder, the X264 software encoder, which is common. And it's also not as good as NVENC, the encoder on NVIDIA GPUs. But there is another technology that Intel support. The Intel encoding engine is known as QuickSync. That's the brand name. And there are libraries to enable QuickSync in FFmpeg. And I went and looked, and somebody had half attempted to enable QuickSync in Owncast, but hadn't finished the job. So I thought, I'm going to follow up on this one.
So hold on, just to recap there. So VA API is just like a generic Linux video accelerated API, whereas QuickSync is an Intel-specific one, like NVENC is an NVIDIA-specific one, right? Have I got that?
Yes.
Right.
And QuickSync and NVENC, as implemented in FFmpeg, kind of have the same full feature set that the X264 encoder has, in that all of the facilities of the encoder are exposed to you. Unlike VA API in FFmpeg, which is basically this bitrate, this frame rate, and little else to actually tune the quality of the output. So I've prepared another patch which adds QuickSync support to Owncast, again, for all of the versions of FFmpeg. So I've submitted these two patches, and also made sure that, you know, NVENC and all the other stuff works as well. So I'm running a forward sort of patched version of Owncast on my server, carrying my patches to sort of test this. But I've found that the Owncast project is a delightful place to contribute work. And although a lot of Owncast is not stuff that I'm familiar with, because there's a lot of the Fediverse protocol stuff that I just don't know. It's written in Golang, which I would say I'm novice at. And there's a whole bunch of web UI stuff, which, you know, I'm a CSS numpty. I really don't know much about that stuff at all. But transcoding and video encoding, I know up and down. So I found a little niche within that project where I can actually contribute and be useful. So I'm looking forward to working on some more fixes and features in the future as well.
First of all, thank you, because that will be welcome addition to Owncast for literally everyone. Do you know when they're likely to review and land those? Because as we sit here recording this, they're both of those patches are like 12 days old. I guess there's not a huge team on Owncast, and these are quite invasive changes, like to the encoding pipeline.
Right. So Gabe organizes quite carefully the releases by milestone. The current stable release is 0.13. 0.2.0 is coming up very soon. That's milestoned, and I think there's only 3 bugs left to resolve. And what Gabe has done is lined up the patches that I've worked on for the next milestone release. So those will be out in 0.2.2, I imagine. But when that is, I don't know, because I'm obviously very fresh and new at this. I'm going to try and persuade Gabe that he lands at least one of those patches in the 0.2.0, because I think it harmonizes things, as in it gives a better experience out of the box.
Yeah, especially for FFmpeg, because, like, you know, if people are putting Owncast on all manner of things, there are VPS providers out there who've got all manner of versions of Debian and Ubuntu and CentOS and whatever else, and people have wildly different versions of FFmpeg compiled in weirdly different ways. So,
right,
you know, you never know what they're going to have on the box. And I guess because FFmpeg isn't built into Owncast, it's having to use the system FFmpeg, isn't it?
Yeah, it has to use an FFmpeg that's provided by the user. So either through the packaging of your distro, or you go and download one of those statically built FFmpegs to expose the features that you're looking for.
Right. And if you're a game streamer, then maybe compiling FFmpeg is not your bag and like right. shooting people in the head from a long distance away is your bag while people are watching you. You know, that it feels like if you can make it as easy as possible. And also that it's detailed in the documentation exactly what versions people should try. I'm looking forward to trying it on my Heads in a Box, actually, because mine's running a Debian and I've got no idea what version of FFmpeg is in there.
Well, as I was testing this, I found another bug, which is the upgrade from 0.1.3 to the new version. It ends up in an infinite recursion loop in the database migration. So that managed to write 74 million log records to my log file.
Shame they're not hardware accelerated as well.
So I filed that as a bug and helped triage it. And that patch has already landed. So Gabe worked on that, found a fix for that and worked on it. So new version coming soon. And if you're interested in following my streaming, it will be starting again soon at wimpysworld.live.